Today on Blue 58, the Packers don't need a receiver, but ignoring that position could bring its own problems. Fortunately, there is a full menu of options available in this year's draft.
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I am your host, John Meerdink, and I am happy to be with you here for another episode because we are officially under a month to the start of the 2024 NFL Draft. We are coming down the home stretch, but we still have a ways to go. Fortunately, there is plenty for us to talk about, a great plenty of things for us to talk about. We've got wide receivers on tap, but I want to circle back to the NFL League meetings this week. We've got a little bit of audio from Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst. Both men spoke on a number of interesting topics, but here's what stood out the most to me. Of course, Matt LaFleur's going to get asked about just about everything to do with the Packers. He is the head coach, so he's got his attention on a lot of different areas, but I am most interested in what he wants to do with Josh Jacobs. The thing that he said right out of the gate when asked about Jacobs is he thinks that there are some opportunities for Jacobs in the passing game that have not been fully explored.
There's more out there for him in regards to the passing game, using him out of the backfield. You know, he's put some really good choice routes on tape, and that's something that we always try to get to. We've done a little bit more down in the red area. But I love the person, you know, just being around him, you know, in that brief time when he came into Green Bay. You know, it's not a shocker to me that why he wore a C on his jersey. You can just see that kind of, the kind of person he is. And I'm really excited about just his style of play.
Great nugget there, of course, about his character as well. But I'd like to hear from LaFleur that he thinks that Jacobs can be used in some new and interesting ways from what we've seen historically from him. That's something that we took note of when the Packers signed him. He really was used differently in Las Vegas with the Raiders than Aaron Jones historically has been used in Green Bay. So probably not a one-to-one replacement for Jones, but LaFleur seems to think that Jacobs can do a lot of the things that Jones did and has done. And as we noted previously, Jacobs has been getting some more high-value targets as a receiver than Jones has over the past couple of years. Less just check-down stuff, more a little bit downfield. Though you're splitting hairs there a little bit, but Jacobs does some really good stuff in the passing game and may be a fit for some of what Jones has done in the past for the Packers, which I think is good news to hear. I think it's also good news that LaFleur doesn't want to budge on his philosophy regarding the use of backs. Here, what he had to say about that.
You guys know how I feel philosophically. I think you have to have multiple backs in this league. You know, those guys take a beating. Now, it's always a luxury when you have a guy that can take those number of carries and be a high volume guy, but I don't see it really changing much in terms of how we want to use our backs. I always think it's a marathon. The NFL season's a marathon, and you need your best players healthy, especially at the end of the season, and then when, kind of like a season ago, when your back's against the rope, so to speak, then you kind of unleash it, and you got to do whatever you got to do to win.
I think that's a really encouraging thing for Jacobs' use in Green Bay because as we noted at the time when he was signed, Jacobs has touched the ball about as many times in 5 years as Jones did in 7 years with the Packers. And just in terms of numbers of carries and touches, Jacobs would be approaching that kind of dividing line where you start to get a little bit concerned about wear and tear. But LaFleur seems very keen on preserving Jacobs, on using him wisely, which I think should help allay some of those concerns about wear and tear and stuff like that. And that seems to bode well for extending Jacobs into what still should be a quite productive portion of his NFL career, even given some of those touches that he's had. Now, Gutekunst, very honest about a couple of questions. Somebody asked him what is probably my favorite kind of question, just something very specific about something that happened this past offseason. Then they do the best thing you can do as a question asker in an interview, shut up and get out of the way. I don't know who asked this specifically, but it was a great question. But basically just said, when did things break down with Aaron Jones?
I think just through the process of going through, obviously, you guys know we asked him to take a pay cut. And as we went through that process and then We kind of realized it wasn't going to probably come to fruition, and obviously we had to do what was best interest of the football team, and that's what we did.
I'd include that not because it's something we didn't know already or wasn't obvious from the outside, but it's just good to have it on tape from Gutekunst. This roster building thing is a process. Your relationships with players are a process. You've got to work through this process, and that's what the Packers were doing with Aaron Jones. Gutekunst seemed confident early in the offseason that Jones was coming back, and that has to be read as thinking they believed he would take a pay cut. But going to Jones and saying, "What do you think?" turned out no was the answer. And so they updated their plan based on the information they had and went in a different direction. Related to that, somebody asked Gutekunst who he would like to put with Xavier McKinney. And he gave what I thought is a revealing answer here about what he's thinking about in terms of building the safety room.
Yeah, certainly I think we'd always prefer to have a younger guy that's going to, you know, have his best football ahead of him. But I think we'll look at all options as we go forward. Certainly we have the draft coming up, which I think will be important. And we've had some success finding guys after the draft in the free agent market that have fit us very well. So, again, I've spoke to you guys in the past about how this kind of never stops, and we'll continue to look at ways to add to our football team, kind of keeping this year, but also, you know, the years in the future in mind as well.
That's an encouraging answer for me personally, because it affirms that we've got a good read on what Gutekunst is trying to do here at the position. Xavier McKinney helped the Packers answer their most important question with the safety position. How do we get at least one good one? We've got Xavier McKinney, that is locked up now. They've got a guy that they think that they can build around, which means that you can go into the draft and whatever happens after the draft in the best possible position, which is to just let things come to you. You no longer have a giant screaming need at safety, which means you don't have to do something stupid like trade a bunch of draft picks just to get one guy, or trade to, you know, whatever amount of picks to just get the one guy that you think is going to fix the problem. Now that you can just add to that position rather than trying to fix it with one big swing. So that's the best thing that you can do there. It also affirms to me that they're going to be looking at the position after the draft. He didn't, you know, say that there's nothing out there at safety, which I think too dovetails with a lot of what we've talked about on this podcast. They're going to reassess after the draft, but they're ready to wait and see what happens in the draft before they make any further decisions, you know, at safety, at any of the positions where they still have needs. And we've got to remember they have 11 draft picks coming up, so there's a lot of things that they can do in the draft that would preclude having to do anything at safety right now. That leads me to a question that I've gotten from a couple of different listeners here. Why haven't the Packers re-signed Rudy Ford? Rudy Ford has been a pretty solid player for the Packers over the past couple of years, has special teams value, makes a lot of plays on the ball, does some good things at safety. Why haven't the Packers shown interest in bringing him back? A couple answers to this question. The first one is the timing aspect, which I think Gutekunst spoke to there. They feel like they're set for now at safety, and they want to see how things play out in the draft before they make any additional moves here. So if the Packers are going to make a move on Rudy Ford, it probably isn't going to happen until after the draft, which is probably where most of the league is right now. They want to wait and see what happens. They want to wait and see how the draft shakes out for them, and then you'll see, I don't know what wave of free agency you would call that, the third, fourth, fifth, whatever, supplemental free agency, put it that way. How about that? Where they can fill in some holes that they think they still have after free agency, so, or after the draft, through the free agents that are still out there, and that probably will include Rudy Ford at that point. So if the Packers want to go back to the well of free agency and things don't break their way during the draft, Ford would be a guy that presumably is going to be out there. However, there's a second possible answer here, and that is the Packers' internal evaluation on Rudy Ford might be different than what you might think if you happen to be a Rudy Ford fan. And I think there's a lot to like about Ford and his game and what he brings to the Packers and their defense. However, we have to remember that what we think is not necessarily what the Packers think, and the Packers kind of showed us what they thought about Ford over the course of last season, in that they basically benched him the second half of the year in favor of Anthony Johnson. They very clearly wanted to get a look at Johnson relative to Ford, and they basically cut Ford loose on defense. He was a special teams-only player for most of the second half of the year. He has some injuries in there as well, but they've kind of told us what they think about him. So I wouldn't count on it as far as Ford coming back. I don't know if it's super likely, but they have a different opinion of him than some of us do, and this kind of speaks to why they're going to let things play out in the draft and then see what's going on after the draft, but they've kind of already told us that Ford is not a big part of their plans. Wide receivers. Looking at wide receivers in this year's draft is a lot of fun. It seems like a pretty good class. Looking at our overall sample of names here, again, collected the top 250 from the Consensus Mock Draft Database on March 13th. There were 33 wide receivers in the top 250 as of that point. 24 of them fell in the top 150. So a pretty solid receiver class, looking at who's figures to be available when the Packers are going to be picking with their most valuable picks. As a whole, this is not an especially big class. I don't mean in terms of number of guys available. I mean in terms of their actual physical size. There are just three players in this class listed at 6 foot three or taller. Well, not in the class, but within this sample that we've got. There's at least one guy I don't have numbers for, so it could be four. But the overall point is that it's not a bunch of big-bodied guys out there. They're just seven players at 6 foot two or taller, and only six players who weighed in at 210 pounds or heavier. However, what they lack in size, they make up for in speed. Nine players broke 4.4 in the 40-yard dash this year. Two of them were still were very close at 4.41 or in the neighborhood there. Another couple guys at 4.2 and 4.3. Very, very fast class, I think, overall. That is the same number, those nine guys under 4.4 in the 40. That's the same number as guys that ran above a 4.5. So a pretty fast class on average. And if you're starting to do the math on guys that are between 4.4 and 4.5, yeah, you can see that there are a lot of fast guys in this year's draft class. Looking at how we evaluate wide receivers, basically don't have to. Paul Noonan of Acme Packing Company, as far as I'm concerned, has basically solved scouting wide receivers by spreadsheet. He's got a variety of stats that he has developed over the past few years that break down and simplify wide receiver scouting. You can go as deep as you want with Paul Numbers. He's got a bunch of good stuff. You can find all of his work at Acme Packing Company. But the two biggest and most important numbers are wide receiver OPS, or WR Ops, and wide receiver APS, or RAPS, which is, well, we'll explain what they are. Wide receiver OPS is a baseball-inspired number. If you're familiar with sabermetrics or the advanced stats in baseball, you've heard of OPS. It's on-base percentage plus slugging percentage. And he translates that into wide receiver terms. On-base percentage for wide receivers is their catch rate per target, how frequently they catch the ball. And your slugging percentage is how often you're making big plays, your yards per catch and stuff like that. And if you think about it, this makes pretty intuitive sense. Those are the two things wide receivers need to do to be successful. You need to catch the ball regularly, and you need to move the ball down the field. And the guys that catch the ball the most regularly and move the ball in the biggest chunks are going to be your most successful and valuable wide receivers. It really doesn't matter how you're getting your yards. If you're doing a bunch after the catch or just getting a bunch down the field, if you're producing, you can be a useful player at the next level. RAPS, or WRAPS, adds the athleticism factor. It scales 1 to 20, adding in relative athletic score. You can actually break 20 in this number, but it's rare. You can see all of Paul's work again at Acme Packing Company. Definitely check it out. And I don't want to steal Paul's thunder, so I don't want to break down every wide receiver that meets the threshold. So go check out his data if you want all of that stuff. Look at his work. But I will tell you this, looking at the way that we tier out the receivers, there are 13 guys in tier one, which is a RAPS of 18 plus. There is one guy in tier two who has a relative athletic score of 8 or more and a wide receiver OPS of 900 plus. And then three guys in tier three, which is just a wide receiver OPS of 900 plus. Which, as you'll note, we don't have an athleticism component in our Tier 3 guys this year, which is a little bit weird if you followed what we've done historically, but here's why. I think wide receiver is a position where you can overrate athleticism. There are a lot of athletic guys, and you see them every year in the draft, who are super-duper athletes but didn't do much productivity-wise in college. You can put those guys on the field in college, and they will do stuff for you and change the geometry of your offense just by being a wild field stretcher for you. But in the NFL, everybody is that athletic. And so you need to be able to filter out the guys who are super, super productive rather than just super athletes. And looking at the tier three guys this way is a way to do that. Packers' needs at wide receiver are negligible, but not zero. The general assumption, I think, among those of us who do this, among the Packers beat, probably among the Packers themselves, is that the Packers have pretty solid, if not incredible, wide receiver depth. Yes and no to that. just on its face, yes, it does look like they have a lot of great receiver depth. You've got Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Malik Heath, and Bo Melton in some order. Pick your depth chart there. Stack it however you like. You've got six guys that you like and can do good things for you in their own ways. However, there are also some assumptions baked into that idea of depth. You're assuming that Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks will take steps forward from last year. Throw Bo Melton and Malik Heath in there too. That seems probable, but it is an assumption, and you don't know how big those steps are necessarily going to be. You're assuming that Christian Watson will be healthy. Again, he has fixed, apparently, his hamstring issues, but we also have a pretty well-documented history of hamstring injuries for him dating back well into his college career. Thinking that they're all fixed now is, well, it's a pretty big assumption. You're also assuming that things are going to go well for Romeo Doubs and he's going to have a role that suits him again. He is a very role-dependent receiver. We've seen that now over 2 years. If things don't stack well for him and he has to take on a bigger role than necessarily suits him again, he might struggle a little bit. If any one of those things fails or any one of those assumptions is not borne out, I think your depth tends to evaluate really quickly. In addition to that, Bo Melton is an exclusive rights free agent next spring. Malik Heath is a restricted free agent in 2026. Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs are unrestricted free agents in 2026 as well. And just to throw on there, Samori Toure is going to be an unrestricted free agent in 2026, but he's probably going to be a free agent sooner than that, if you take my meaning. The point is, the Packers are going to need a backfill here sooner than later. At the latest, they're going to have to start filling in their depth portions of their depth chart next year, I would think. And failing to backfill is what got the Packers into this situation where they had to go into a season basically entirely young at receiver in the first place. Now, it worked out for them in 2023. You really want to bet that that's going to work out twice in a row? No, of course not. At some point, you're going to have to backfill. You might as well have that in the back of your mind right now. So, all that in mind, acknowledging that we're not just going to talk about every receiver that meets the threshold here, let's do things a little bit differently. And by a little bit differently, I mean very differently. Close your eyes, open your mind's eye here for a second, and just picture yourself in a little bit of a different setting. Welcome to Wideout, the best restaurant in town that you've never heard of. It's in your town. Where is it? It's in the trendy spot. Of course you know that. We've got crisp linen tablecloths, some tasteful interior decorating around, nice plants inside, mood lighting, maybe some ambient music. And you can tell by the sign that we have out front, which is in all lowercase letters, that we are a very serious restaurant. And our menu, of course, backs that up. It was all written on an old typewriter. And as you look at it, you will see that all the prices are in round numbers. You won't find an entree here for $17.99. Prepare to see a bunch of things listed for prices like $8 or $25 or $36, or best of all, market rate, which is a secret price known only to us. And you will find out what that price is when we bring you the bill at the end of your meal. Now, of course, as your waiter, I can make a few recommendations for you from today's menu, which is actually different from yesterday's menu because our old chef quit and our new chef is artfully reimagining what it means to be a restaurant in a city like this. And we are definitely going to be out of a business in about a month. And people you know are going to mention, hey, did you ever go to that spot? What was it? Is it gone now? I don't know what happened. But I can tell you, if you order quickly, we can probably definitely get you something. And if you're looking for wine pairings, just know that each glass comes with an uncorking fee. And I am always, as your waiter, going to recommend the most expensive bottle, no matter what you're trying to eat. Because let's face it, you're going to think it's good if you pay a lot of money for it anyway. All right, I can't keep up this bit anymore. The point is, I'm going to give you some menu recommendations from this selection of wide receivers we have in this year's class based on what you might be looking for and talk about a receiver that I think meets those characteristics. So, as you pull up your very pretentious menu here, if you're looking, if you've sat down and are looking for just a really good wide receiver, we're not talking Marvin Harrison Jr. because we don't have testing numbers on him, but if you may be interested in somebody along those lines, how about Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU? 6'3", 209 pounds, and I think has it all, basically. Athleticism, he's got it. 9.82 relative athletic score, ran a 4.33 in the 40-yard dash, and I think has a legit claim as the best size-speed prospect in this entire draft class. We add in height-adjusted speed score from time to time just for another fun number to look at. It's just like speed score for running back, but it gives you a bonus to running fast by well, while also being big and tall. So if you run a good time at a heavy weight and you are also tall, you get a bit of a boost. If you run well, or maybe not so well, and you're a little bit shorter, we're going to adjust your speed score down a little bit. Thomas brings us a speed score, height-adjusted speed score, of 122.2, which is the best number in the class among guys for whom we have testing numbers. Not too shabby. Productivity-wise, he broke 20 on Paul Noonan's rap score, which we said is rare but doable, which translates basically to wildly productive. And if you'd prefer more traditional numbers, how about nearly 1,200 yards and 17 touchdowns in 13 games in 2023? That's pretty good about every way you slice it. As clean of a prospect as you're going to find in these areas that we talk about. There are some knocks on him. One of them is that he can't beat press coverage. That is a knock on a lot of young wide receivers, which is fair, but I think at the NFL level and at all levels of football, really, it is one that is mitigatable. Not a word, but you understand what I'm meaning. You can get around a guy who can't beat press coverage. Because if you're fast enough, for one thing, it becomes a fraught proposition to press guys too. Because you press guys and he gets off of it, he's going to run by you. You press a guy and miss, he's really going to run by you. Look at Marquez Valdes-Scantling, a limited wide receiver in many ways. But even though he struggled with press coverage, you swing and you miss on him, he is off to the races. Or you motion him into the slot, make him like the third receiver in a trips formation, and he's going to be working on a linebacker who is either unwilling or unable to press him anyway. He gets a free release and he's going vertical. It doesn't matter that he struggles with press coverage anymore because he was not pressed on that play because of what you did with him pre-snap. If a guy is big enough and fast enough, he's worth having around whether or not he can beat press coverage or not. Perhaps you're not interested in a receiver like that. Maybe you're looking for a little bit more of a value proposition. Well, think back to beloved general manager Ted Thompson. Who would Ted Thompson have selected in the second or perhaps third round of this year's NFL draft? Could I present to you Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina? What did Ted Thompson like at receiver? He liked big-bodied athletes. Jordy Nelson, James Jones. Greg Jennings wasn't that big-bodied of an athlete, but he's pretty close. And what is Leggett? He is a big-bodied athlete. 6'1", not super tall, but 221 pounds. He is the second heaviest wide receiver we've got on our books for this year and moves well at that size. 4.39 in the 40-yard dash. A little bit unpolished as a receiver, not a long-term focal point in South Carolina's offense. I think the flip side, if you want to look at that or reframe it, is that there is upside there. If he is this highly regarded and is really just coming into his own as a receiver, I think there's a chance that there's a lot of growth possibility there as well. So take a guy with some upside who maybe hasn't had a big part in an offense before and let him flourish as he grows and learns behind some of the guys that you've got. Maybe you're looking for ultra value, and maybe you would like to find the next Dontavian Wicks. How about I give you the name Javon Baker out of UCF? 114 on the big board at the time of our sample. Looks and feels a lot like Dontavian Wicks as a prospect. 6'1", 204 pounds, so about same size-wise. Just a 7.77 relative athletic score. Only ran a 4.54 in the 40, so not an overwhelming athlete, but certainly good enough. You can get by being that good of an overall athlete, and a 4.54 is not a disqualifier at receiver by any means. We've seen guys be very productive who ran in that neighborhood, even in Green Bay, and he has been very productive in college. 1,100 yards and just 52 catches in 2023. That is a cool average of nearly 22 yards per reception. Not too shabby there at all. Did struggle with drops a little bit. 10.6% of his targets were dropped last year, according to Pro Football Focus, which is bad. But you know who else has struggled with drops? Dontavian Wicks, and he turned out to be very solid for the Packers last year. Drops are fixable and are not kind of an immutable characteristic of your profile as a wide receiver. I wouldn't have a huge problem with taking a guy like Baker with that profile on day three of the draft. So if he's there, not too shabby. How about if you're interested in a goon for Matt LaFleur? He loves his big wide receivers, wants them to do things as blockers, wants them sometimes to act as quasi-tight ends. Well, if that's what you're interested in, how about Johnny Wilson out of Florida State? What is lacking among the Packers wide receiver room? Probably a goon-like player. The gooniest wide receiver they have right now is Dontavian Wicks, and he is not like previous ones who have filled that role. Nobody is Alan Lazard for all of his limitations as a player, and we saw many of them during his lone season, what it looks like to be his lone season with the New York Jets. But he has a lot of admirable qualities too. Where is the guy among the Packers wide receivers where you wonder if maybe he should be a tight end? That's a conversation that the Packers actually had with Alan Lazard prior to, what was it, the 2018 NFL draft. The Packers don't currently have that sort of guy right now, but they could have that guy if they went out and got Mr. Wilson here. 6'6", 231 pounds, not too shabby. Ran a 4.52 at that size, not a burner, but plenty fast for 231 pounds and 6'6", but he did also run a 4.11 in the short shuttle, which is very good, great, in fact, for that size and height. Unfortunately, as is the case with a lot of guys in college, he did not play to that size consistently. Just had a 40% contested catch rate. At that rate, you are just large. You are not a goon. Unfortunately, you are not an overpowering guy if you're only getting 40% of your contested catches. At 6'6", 231 pounds, that is something that could change. And you scheme him right, you may not have to have him make a whole lot of contested catches anyway, but he's not just going to be a physically dominant guy. At least the numbers have not shown that he does that to this point in his career. He also had a 10%-ish drop rate, maybe closer to 11, depending how you round the numbers. So not incredibly consistent there, but look, a height, weight, speed prospect, he's right up there with among the best in this year's class. What if you're looking for the ultra steal, the seventh round steal, right there at the end of the draft? How about Bub Means out of Pittsburgh? Background for Means shows why he is just 241 on the big board right now. Played at Louisiana Tech and Tennessee before transferring to Pittsburgh. He started his career at Tennessee as a cornerback, so pulling a reverse shield before transferring to Tech and then to Pittsburgh where he finished things out. So to break it down for you, 2019 he's playing cornerback at Tennessee, transfers, 2020 he got the pandemic, 2021 he's at Louisiana Tech, then Pittsburgh, 2021, he's at Tech, then Pittsburgh for 22 and 23, where he's very productive. He's never had more than 700 yards overall in a season, but never less than 400, and has a career average of 17.2 yards per catch. Physically, he's got what you're looking for, 6'1", 212 pounds, ran a 4.43 in the 40. Overall relative athletic score of 9.71. Spread-based offenses like he played in college do get dinged a little bit in the scouting process. It's a difficult projection. It's not really an NFL-style offense. But you see a lot of those themes showing up in the NFL and more every year. So I would consider myself quite a bit less worried about that than I would have been in the past. So the steal, I mean, you don't need to get too much into the negatives for a guy who's looking to be a late day three pick. Means might be there for you if that's something that you're interested in. And what, after all, if you're just interested in a guy who is simply productive? A pair of options here, both of them coming from our California region, if we want to return to our restaurant analogy or that bit, maybe I should just let that go. But Brendan Rice and Taj Washington, both from USC. Both of them have pretty similar scouting profiles. Though Rice is considered the better athlete, he's got a relative score, athletic score of 707 to Washington's just 403. A lot of that has to do with Washington's size. He's just under 5'10", 5'9 and 3 quarters, so pretty small receiver. Both of them ran in the 4-5 range in the 40. And as we say every year at some point in the draft process, you can be fast or you can be slow or you can be small, but you can't be slow and small. And Washington is right on the borderline of being genuinely slow for a wide receiver his size. But both of them were wildly productive in college. Both have a WROPS of above .966, which is crazy, crazy good. Washington's is above 1, which is insanely good. A lot of that probably has to do with who they had playing quarterback. When you've got the best quarterback in the draft, or one of the best quarterbacks, depending on how you stack the consensus there, in Caleb Williams throwing you the ball, if you're any kind of decent at receiver, you will probably put up numbers. That said, those are numbers that are almost too good to fake. And I would say both profile as the kind of guys who will slide in the draft a little bit, but then light up training camps because, as it turns out, they're actually just good at playing wide receiver, which is a forgotten characteristic a lot of the times in the draft. When you start looking at testing numbers and consensus on draft and what you should be looking for in terms of archetypes and stuff like that, yeah, maybe these guys don't necessarily meet some of those archetypes, but if you can just play football, chances are you're going to be a good football player at the next level too, whatever limitations you may have athletically, of course, to a certain point. So that is our menu of wide receivers. There are many more that we would consider good in this class. Check out Paul Noonan's work for Acme Packing Company, and we will, of course, talk about more wide receivers in depth if we get to the point where we're drafting guys that showed up on this board and through this process. But that's all I've got for you in this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with somebody you think would enjoy it. It's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.